Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on compulsory education right after this. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage your own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, incompetence, incapacity. And we have now been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions in our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals, professionals like bankers to manage our financial affairs, and doctors to manage and treat our health problems, and lawyers to direct our business and legal affairs, instead of relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish, instead of being fed by these paid professionals. Regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, our rights, our liberties, and our duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for our free general law CD package? Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, and just send us an email. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And you can click on to our archives page, and you'll find that free general law CD package right there on the archives page, and you can download it right there off your computer. All right, we've been talking about compulsory education. Now, to start this program today, let's run back through what we've discovered so far. We have three modalities for education, and we also have a two-part, that is, two authorities that compel us to educate our children. First of all, Moses, when he came down off the mountain, had a mandate from God Almighty, the creator of the universe, to educate your children. You were told, educate your children, and you were told how and what kind of education to give them. Now, over time, we've created a civil law state to compete with this biblical law, this creator of the universe. We call it the civil law state, the Roman civil law. And they, too, require that we educate our children, but they require that we educate our children in public school. And they're not doing that by accident. Everybody that's in the education business or in the education field understands full well, whether it's in religion, the civil law state, or from God in the Bible. The guy that controls the mind, the raising, the education of the child, controls the child for the rest of his life. And it deals with education versus indoctrination. Education versus indoctrination. Can you say indoctrination, boys and girls? Now, the educational system that we're all exposed to in the public school system is an indoctrination. It doesn't have anything to do with education. Education is where we present information to you and you make a choice. Indoctrination is where we present information to you and there is no choice. Well, let's just take a look at the two and we'll come to a little better understanding of what the hell's going on here. First of all, indoctrination is where we send you to catechism. We don't send you to the Catholics, the Baptists, and the Methodists, and the Jehovah's Witnesses, and then let you make a decision. What we do is we send you to catechism in the Catholic Church, catechism in the Jehovah's Witnesses Church, or catechism in the Presbyterian Church, and we present one story. And then we tell that story in such a way that if you don't believe the story and if you don't follow our mandates, you're going to go to hell and burn forever. We do the same thing in the public school system. We start off by telling everybody you have to send your child to public school. So they don't tell you that you have a choice. So you have homeschool, parochial school, and public school. Same thing happens in the Catholics or the political arena. We don't tell you that there are other choices out there for you to make. We just make our presentation. And we won't tell you anything else. So we're going to deceive you by omission, or in many cases we'll deceive you by commission and do it intelligently and intentionally. And we'll tell you there is no other church than the Catholic Church. There is no other political ideology other than this political ideology. So when you were a young child growing up, you were turned into a Republican or a Democrat by your parents. That's why. Think about where you're at today politically, and where did you get your political ideology? Then when they sent you to public school, the public school teacher was probably a liberal, and as a result of that, you became liberal in your political philosophy. Now, there was a pope back in the 11th century, I believe it was, and I think it was Pope Innocent about the 4th. And he said, you give me a child until he's 7 years old, and he will be a Catholic for life. In the Bible, there's a statement made in Proverbs that says something to the effect is that as the twig is bent, so the tree will grow. And in Proverbs it says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. So this thing of indoctrination is very important. And the earlier you get started, the better. This is why government wants you to send your child to Head Start, kindergarten, preschool. The sooner that we can get into that child's mind, then the sooner we can get this process underway. So they started, you know, in 6, 7, 8 years old, and they have been continually working that down till now. They've got children, you know, 3, 4 years old. Hell, they've got them in daycare and day school. Moms and dads are out busy working, making a living. The minds of their children are being created by the state. Now, we've been taking a look at that. Now, there's a doctrine here called parens patre. Parens patre. I write this down because it's a Latin term. And it says P-A-R-E-N-S. That's the first word. P-A-R-E-N-S. Parens patre. And patre is spelled P-A-T-R-I-A-E. It's an odd spelling. P-A-T-R-I-A-E. And it deals with the fiduciary obligations and state power. State power. Where does the state of New Jersey get the power to compel you to educate your child in their school? I mean, think about this for a minute. Let's suppose I walked up to you one day, knocked on your door, and I said, from now on, I want you to send your child to the Gordon School. What would you say to that? You'd say, well, you've got to be some kind of a lunatic. Okay. Now the state of New Jersey comes up to you and says, from now on, we want you to educate your child in our school. You don't think that the state is being manned by a bunch of lunatics. You say, oh, yes, sir, I understand it. Where did you get that understanding? Who told you that? You see, we start off by educating you in the public school system. It's It's the camel sticking his nose in the tent, and pretty soon the camel's in the tent and you're out in the sandstorm. So over a long period of time, we have indoctrinated you to turning your child and your child's education over to total strangers. You don't know who these total strangers are. And right away somebody's going to say, well, I know my teachers, my child's teacher, and I go to PTA. Your teacher doesn't create the curriculum. She just carries it out. She teaches what she's told to teach. She teaches what's in the book. She doesn't write the book. She isn't the administrator that determines what that child is going to hear and what he's not going to hear. The teacher is a fiduciary, and this is the fiduciary obligations and state power. Teachers have fiduciary obligations. School administrators have fiduciary obligations. Now, in this paper, I want to explore the philosophical foundations of the venerable but little discussed doctrine of parens patria, and more specifically, I'm interested in the way in which this doctrine conceives of the three-way relationship among the child, the parent, and the state, and in the scope of state control over parent-child relations, that the doctrine may be taken to justify who shall argue what or that, while society has a legitimate interest in the upbringing of its children, the doctrine's central underlying thesis that parents are merely the agents of society in the area of child rearing. It rests on the untenable principles of political morality and has implications that are profoundly anti-liberal. At the same time, it is important to note that the doctrine of parens patriae represents a particular conception of parenthood as a fiduciary or trust-like relationship, and that the application of the fiduciary concept to parenthood may provide the rudiments of an acceptable theory of parenthood, even though this particular conception ultimately turns out to be indefensible. For this reason, I shall divide my discussion into two parts, beginning with an examination of what can and cannot be attributed to fiduciary relationships as such, and then moving on to consider the specific claim that parents are granted fiduciary powers over their children by the state. The state of New Jersey grants you the privilege of raising your child. Well, where in the hell did the state of New Jersey get the power to come to you, knock on your door, and say, from now on, you shall educate your child in our schools, to our curriculum? How do you like that? Now, you accept that. There isn't anybody out there that has any questions about the state of California educating your child. Now, if the Catholic Church came up, knocked on your door, and said, from now on, you shall send your child to Catholic catechism, you'd have conniption fits. But you don't have any problem sending your child to another bunch of strangers over here called the state of California or the state of Florida or the state of Germany, or the state of Japan, or the state of Brazil, and educating your child to concepts that are totally, totally at variance with your personal, or your moral, or your political beliefs. You don't have a problem with that at all. And that's because you've been taught and trained. You have yourself been indoctrinated to accept this state of affairs. I mean, everybody has, and so as a result of that, we accept. There are certain things that we accept in life, like driver's licenses and marriage licenses. Why do you go to the state? Let me ask you this. Let's suppose I came up, knocked on your door, and said, now, when you want to get married, you come to me, and I will give you permission to marry. When you want to drive, you come to me, and I will give you permission to drive. You know, you'd look at me and say, well, who in the hell do you think you are? Which is why I'm asking you, well, who in the hell is the state of Missouri or the state of Florida or California to tell you when you get ready to marry, you shall come to me. When you get ready to drive, you shall come to me. Where did this power come from? It isn't that I'm telling you that it doesn't exist. It's there. I just wanted to raise to your conscious level here Where did that come from? Why did you accept that authority as opposed to some other authority? Now, the origin of this doctrine of parens patriae in the law can be traced to medieval and late medieval English chancery courts, where it played an important role in maintaining the structure of feudalism. Chancery, as an agent of the monarchy, had a duty to assure the orderly transfer of feudal duties from one generation to another, and to ensure that there would be someone available to perform these duties. And the concept of parens patriae was usually invoked in connection with problems of property or guardianship. Later, in response to the social and economic changes of the declining feudal age, statutes dealing with the custody of children by the poor were enacted, and the doctrine of parens patriae was used to justify involuntary separation of children from pauper parents and subsequent apprenticeship to others. All right, now, we have that very same thing going on today. We call the lady social lady, and she comes out and she takes the children from undeserving parents and places them in foster homes with more deserving parents. Where does this power come from? Where did this idea originate? When we go back to Mount Sinai with Moses, we find a different regimen here, that parents, headed by the father, own the child. And in fact, the parents not only own the child, they have the power of life and death over that child until he emancipates. Now, I can readily understand people's concern about this kind of power residing in the hands of parents. The power of life and death over your children. Today, when a Muslim kills his teenage daughter, we here in the Western world look at that with great apprehension. We say, oh my God. This power resides from God Almighty Himself. The Muslims simply still practice it. Christians don't practice biblical law any longer. Christians do not practice the Ten Commandments. But the Muslims still do. And so this concept that the parents of children are the power over children still resides in the Muslim world. It hasn't here in the Western world since medieval times. But it used to. It used to. Now, similar provisions were common in the poor laws of the American colonies. And in some of the colonial statutes, we can see the beginnings of the idea that children are to be protected not only from poverty, but also from parents who are undeserving, who, for example, do not provide for their children with good breeding, or neglect their formal education, or do not teach them a trade, or are idle, dissolute, unchristian, or incapable. The concept of parens patriae, first used in chancery, where protection of feudal relationships and property are the major concerns, and later transplanted into a branch of the poor law, eventually came to suggest a general power or right of the state to intervene in intramarital affairs on behalf of the child or society, and to separate children from their parents. Why do you go to the state to get a marriage license to marry? The power that the state has over you, you gave them. The state has not come to you and taken this power without your consent. Everything here in the Western world, you know, I'm talking about Western Europe and the United States and Canada and Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and so on, those Anglo-Saxon countries. The root of our law comes from the Ten Commandments and the Law of Moses. Now, we have, over time, perverted that law. We've changed it. We've usurped it. And we've supplanted it. But the fundamentals of that law are the fundamentals or the basis of Anglo-Saxon administration. And we still have the rudiments here. We may not have the actual practice, but we do have the rudiments. Now, it used to be, when Moses came down off the mountain, that a man married a woman, and he went to the woman's father and paid her a bride price and bought her and owned her like a cow. Now, I know that's totally unacceptable for most of you people listening to me, and I didn't come here to, upset your day. I just came here to give you a report. That's the way the game was played. That's why the female, to this day, is given to the husband. You know, you go into a church ceremony, and then the father of the bride walks the bride down the aisle and gives her, you know, in a formal ceremony, to the bridegroom. They very seldom ever pay a bride price, and nobody practices dowries anymore. And there's a reason for these ancient, old-timey customs and laws. You know, there was a purpose behind it. It didn't just happen overnight in the Clinton administration or because of George W. Bush or something, you know. It's been around for thousands of years. Now, once we get this marriage thing out of the way, it's done with a marriage license, which then creates a three-party limited general partnership between the boy, the girl, and the state. The state makes the rules and the legislature, which the boy and the girl never read. The boy and the girl have no idea what the marriage laws and education laws and truancy laws and so on. You know, if I said to you, could you find the truancy laws in your state statutes? Hell, you wouldn't have a clue. If I said, where did the state get its power of fiduciary obligation? You'd say, huh? Was it? Now, this is going to impact upon you. You're going to live your life, and you're going to have people knocking on your door with uniforms on and social ladies coming in and taking your children or threatening to or disrupting your family and family affairs here, but you don't know why or where this power came from or where it originated or how to avoid these kinds of problems. And how do I live my life without social lady and without the state telling me how to educate my kid? Now, for most people, they're perfectly satisfied with the status quo. Most people are very satisfied with life the way it is, and I'm not here to get in the way of that. Some people are not satisfied with the status quo. A small minority of people take a look at this and say, this is preposterous. How did this thing degenerate or deteriorate to this state of affairs? It's called parens patriae. Parens patriae, been around for a long time. In fact, it goes back before the Middle Ages. It goes back to the Babylonian mystery religion. Hell, Nimrod at the Tower of Babel was educating children for the purposes of the state. So did the Assyrians and the Egyptians. Everybody that's got his brain on, switched on, understands that children are malleable. That children believe what they're told. Children believe Santa Claus comes down a 6-inch pipe because that's what you teach them. Not because it's true, it's because that's what they've been taught, and they believe that. Hell, they will practice Christmas until their dying day, in spite of the fact that the Bible tells you not to do that. Nobody's influenced by the Bible, and nobody's influenced by reason, logic, or common sense. We believe in fairy tales because fairy tales are what are being taught to us. And then when we get to be big people, you know, we get to be adults, we believe the fairy tales that come from the mouths of our superiors. When the President of the United States speaks, we believe what he tells us, even though you have a gut instinct. And your gut instinct says, I just don't believe they can do that. I just don't believe that's going to work. And your gut instinct is about right 99% of the time. They can't do that and it doesn't work. But you voted it in anyway. And you'll participate in it. You know, like this new healthcare program. No, they can't afford it. And no, it won't work, but we're going to vote it in anyway. Now, in some of the colonial statutes, we can see the beginnings of the idea that children are to be protected, not only from poverty, but also from parents who are undeserving. Well, who in the hell is going to decide whether or not you are deserving or undeserving of the children that you and your wife have created? God Almighty in the Scripture has never taken that power upon Himself. He could, he could have had he wanted to, but he gave those children to you with instructions. He said, "I want you to educate him, and I want you to give him a legal education, and here's the law that I want you to educate him in." And then you came along and said, "No, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give my child a liberal arts education. I'm going to join a partnership with the state of New Jersey. And I'm not going to own my wife," and blah, blah, blah. You know, these are all choices that you had to make, and you made them. And there's an outcome that comes from it. And I'm just describing the outcome. Now, the concept of parens patre, first used in chancery, where protection of feudal relationships and property were the major concern, and later transplanted into a branch of the poor law, eventually came to suggest a general power or right of the state to intervene in intra-family affairs on behalf of the child or society, and to separate children from their parents. The very objective here is to separate you from your children. Well, if it becomes necessary. So now the state of New Jersey says, this is what we want, and if you provide that, we'll let you keep your child. And if you don't perform, if you don't provide what we want, we will take your child and give it to somebody else. The main elements of the doctrine were articulated in the famous 19th century English custody case of Wellesley versus Wellesley, spelled W-E-L-L-E-S-L-E-Y, Wellesley, in which the petition of a father against his deceased wife's sisters for custody of his minor children was denied on grounds that he was living in adultery and thus set a poor moral example for his children. Now, in his opinion, Lord Redesdale maintained that parents have rights to their children only as a privilege granted by the state, and that the state delegates control over children to their parents as a trust, and that it does so because parents usually discharge this trust faithfully on behalf of their children. When this trust is not faithfully discharged, as when the parent is cruel or fails to maintain his child, the state has the right to revoke the trust and to intervene on the child's behalf. Who decides this? Who decides that you are cruel or that you have failed to maintain your child? Well, it's social lady, school teacher, or it's Mr. Policeman. It's some state agent or agency. This state, get this, it's always the state agent or agency. Now, if I came up and knocked on your door and said, I've decided that you're cruel and undeserving of your child, and I'm going to take your child and put him in foster care, you'd say, huh? The state comes along, does the same thing. You say, huh, but they come over here with billy clubs and guns. And they don't Mickey Mouse around when they do it either. They come out there with SWAT teams, and they just really raise hell with you. Now, where did they get this kind of power? It's because you gave it to them. I'll show you that as we progress along. The power that the state has over you, your wife, and your children is because you gave it to them. You had a choice to make, and you made your choice. Now, you may be sitting there saying, but I didn't have a choice. Well, that's what indoctrination does, see. Nobody ever educated you to this concept that there is a choice between the Mosaic Law and the Law of New Jersey. They taught you the Law of New Jersey, and then they never taught you the Law of Moses, and never gave you the opportunity in an educational forum to make that choice. I don't deny that. And everybody suffers from indoctrination. The public school system is a system of indoctrination. The religious system, it's a system of indoctrination. And so we indoctrinate Catholic children with Catholic philosophy. And we indoctrinate the state's children with state philosophy. There's another institution out there. It's called the Creator of the Universe and the biblical system, or the biblical program. you could make a choice if you had the knowledge that there was a choice out there for you to make. But of course, most people are prejudiced against the Bible to start with, aren't they? I mean, think about it for a moment. What's your opinion concerning the Bible? It's a collection of writings from long-haired, bearded Jews who did not know science and didn't know what they were talking about. It's historically inaccurate and it's totally unreliable. That's your opinion of it. Well, where in the hell did you get that opinion? Who told you that? If I were to ask you the next question, well, did you ever read it? Most people will say to me, yes, I read it. And I say, well, what did you think of Ezekiel 37? These people look at you like, well, but what does Ezekiel 37 say? I thought you said you read the book. You know, if I said, what did you think about Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus 26, and Revelation 6? Did you code plead that out with Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21? They look at you with a blank stare. Of course they've never done that. They couldn't find Matthew, Mark, or Luke with both hands in a road and map at high noon. But they have an opinion about it. And furthermore, it impacts upon them under this doctrine of parens patriae, but they don't get a clue as to why or how. As interpreted by most courts on this side of the Atlantic, the theory of parens patriae holds that parents' rights emanate from the state and are capable of being annulled by the state under certain circumstances in order to protect the welfare of the child. You've heard that. In the best interests of the child. In some cases, however, a different rationale for state intervention is presented. It is to be remembered, the court in Ex parte Krauss argued, that the public has a paramount interest in the virtue and knowledge of its members, and that of strict right the business of education belongs to the state. That parents are ordinarily entrusted with it is because it can seldom be put into better hands, but where they are incompetent or corrupt, that is there, or what is there to pervert the public from withdrawing, or prevent the public from withdrawing their faculties, held as they are obviously are its sufferance. The right of parental control is a natural but not an unalienable one. The right of parental control is a natural right, but it is not an unalienable right. Why not? When the creator of the universe himself has not interjected himself to take your children away from you because you're cruel or because you are deficient in his view or in his point, God himself has never taken your children away from you because you didn't give him a legal education in the forum, in the format that he directed you to do. I mean, there's a day of reckoning coming, but he hasn't taken your children away from you. But you've signed up with another outfit over here, and if you don't follow their mandates and instructions, they will take your child away from you. So you had a choice there, if you only knew it. And the choice was, choice one is the creator of the universe is going to give you these children, and these children are yours, and you have the power of life and death over them. And he's not going to intervene, he's not going to take your kid away from him because you educated him in the Catholic Church, or you educated him in some way, And you didn't give him, you know, you gave him a liberal arts education, or you taught him to be a doctor, and you didn't educate him in law. God is not going to intervene, take your kid away from you. Now, if the state, on the other hand, you make your alliance with the state, and you don't follow the mandates of the state and educate the child the way they want him, or treat the child and take care of him, and raise him, and educate him, and whatever, they're going to take him away from you. I mean, that was the choice that you had. You didn't know that. So you joined up with the state. You've got a marriage license. You got a birth certificate for the kid. You passed your seed through the fire to Moloch. You got a three-party limited general partnership. The state's the dominant party in the partnership, and they dictate and direct by law. They create the laws. Let me try it this way. I want to come up, knock on your door, and I want to say to you and your wife, I want you to enter into a contract with me. You don't know me, and you've never seen me before. I'm a total stranger to you. But hell, These people that you're making these contracts with the state of New Jersey are total strangers. You don't know who in hell these people are. You've never met any of them. Can you tell me who your social lady is? I can tell you who mine is. It's Carla Smith. But who in the hell is your social lady? Now, you get a contract with your social lady, and you don't even know who in the hell she is. Do you think that that's very wise, making contracts with total strangers? If I came up and knocked on your door and said, I want to make this contract with you, and I'm going to make the rules under the terms of the contract, and I will change these rules from time to time without any notice to you whatsoever over the next 30, 40, or 50 years, and you agree that you'll be bound by all these rules and all these laws and regulations that I'm going to create. You know, if you've got a brain that functions above the IQ level of 80, you'd look at me and say, you've got to be a lunatic. So let me ask you while we take our break, excuse me, but you've got this contract with the state of New Jersey. Do you think the state of New Jersey is a lunatic? And with that question, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, or sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.com, or georgegordon.net, and you can download that free general law CD package right off of our archives page. Same page that you turn to listen to the program. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans in their viewpoint, may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the doctrine of parens patriae. The subject matter this week is compulsory education. Compulsory education. The state's power to compel you under penalty of law to educate your children in beliefs and practices that are totally foreign and alien to you. For instance, sex education in public school is mandated in the same way that driver's education is mandated. Now, probably most of us would agree that driver's education is probably a pretty good program. I'm
I'm not so sure that sexual education in the public school is nearly as good a plan, especially since it may be being carried out by lesbians, pedophiles, sodomites, and other sexual deviants who may not hold or share the same beliefs and practices that you do. And you may have an objection to that. Or you may be a Republican, radical conservative, and you may take exception with the political liberalism being taught or disseminated by the civics teacher in your public school. Or it could be vice versa. And so, what are you going to do about that, or do you have any input into that? Maybe you're in favor of evolution. If you are, you don't have a problem with public school. That's the place to learn it. But if you're opposed to evolution, and you believe in special creation, and you have good scientific grounds for doing that, and you believe in it, but you're opposed to evolutionary philosophy, what are you going to do about it? That's my point. You don't have any input into this program. Now, you could have, you know, and if you want to, you can take control of your child's education. You can get this control back. It's not easy. It's easier to stay out of trouble than it is to get out of trouble after you get into it. And here at the law school, people never call me, and if they do, I'll have to think a long time, but people never call me before the fact. They always call after the fact. And I think you doctors out there would make the same conclusion. Nobody ever calls you and says, can you keep me healthy? People don't go to the doctor when they're healthy and say, how do I stay healthy? They go to the doctor after they get sick. After you've got cancer, you'll go to the doctor and say, fix it. Nobody ever goes to the doctor and says, what do I have to do to prevent cancer? Nobody ever comes here and knocks on the door and says, what do I have to do to stay out of trouble? They wait until they get into trouble, then they knock on the door. And then they say, save me, save me, I'm about to go to prison. Well, same thing is true here. People call and they talk about social lady and how the state is beating up on them and how the state's doing this, that, and another thing. And I start off by saying, sir, are you married? Yeah. Got a marriage license? Yeah. Children? Yeah. Birth certificates? Yeah. Okay. Did you understand, sir, that you have a three-party limited general partnership and that you agreed with the state of Texas to the terms and conditions that they are now enforcing upon you? And they gasp and they say, I don't believe it. like I'm supposed to convince this guy that I'm right and he's wrong. Hell, I didn't call you and say, hey, listen to me. I'm not knocking on your door saying, hey, give me this power. I'm just here to report to you. Did you know that there's some people out there that have this power of parents patre over you? Most of you people are sitting out there saying, I never even heard the word parents patre until you just mentioned it to me here on the air. And that's about true. Now, as interpreted by most courts on this side of the Atlantic, the theory of parents patre holds that parents' rights emanate from the state and are capable of being annulled by the state. Now, here, the defeasibility of the trust to parents is justified on the grounds that child rearing affects interests beyond those of the parents and children, and that the state, as guardian of the social welfare, may, and perhaps must, intrude into family affairs when necessary to protect important social interests. Krauss thus adopted the doctrine of parents patre, not simply as a protective device for children against their parents. For the court in Krauss, the harmful consequences for the society at large of parental incompetence or unworthiness to rear children justify state intervention under the doctrine of parents patre. Well, let me show you how God handles this. It is true that there are parents out there that are cruel. and beat up on their children. When I was a child, see, I lived in the era before social lady and child abuse. And I always was thankful and grateful for my parents, because I could look at other children who were being disciplined by their parents. And I remember the Mitchell kids. Now, the Mitchell kids, I don't think, were ever abused or taken advantage of. But I want to tell you that Mr. Mitchell and his mother, Mrs. Mitchell, were much more strict than the Gordons. And those kids, they got whipped regularly. And I mean, they got whipped hard. And I think that they probably turned out to be pretty fine students and pretty fine citizens here in America. But I was always concerned as a child that Mrs. Mitchell was going to get hold of me. I stayed away from the Mitchells as much as possible, out of fear of Mrs. Mitchell. Now, she never did grab me, but I was always afraid that she might. And you know, there are parents out there that are oppressive and that do abuse their children and beat. Hell, they kill them. They kill them. Now, when a child is killed by its parents, then the correct modality is to try him for murder. Did he discipline his kid in such a way that he caused the child to die? Then that's murder, and that's actionable. But the concept of taking a child away because, in our opinion, he's too strict. See, by today's standards, if you were to look at my father and the way he disciplined me and used corporal punishment on me, in today's environment, I would be removed from my father's home. There's no two ways about it. And then I think that the Mitchell kids would probably have been taken out of that home also. And so most of you parents are afraid to discipline your children with corporal punishment, which is not against the law, by the way. So corporal punishment is in the statute books of every state in the Union, and probably in your country, wherever you live. But it has to be used according to the state's interpretation. So you need to be involved with the state statutes and find out, well, what does South Africa require or prohibit? You know, what does France require or prohibit? But my point is this, that the standards for this corporal punishment today are such that children today are taken out of homes because of being beaten or being overzealous parents disciplining their children, that when I was a kid, nobody would have ever raised an eyebrow. They would have said, that kid probably needed that. And today, social lady pulls him right out of that home. Now, in the trust referred to by Lord Redesdale, the settlor, or creator of the trust, is the state. The trustee is presumably the child's natural parents, and the beneficiary of the trust, it's called a sesticui trust, is the minor child. A sesticui trust, the minor child. The trust in this context does not, of course, have its modern technical meaning of a trust of property, but in the early 19th century, before the development of the modern law of trusts, many matters of confidence were called trusts. Whether or not there was any strict trust of the property, A was said to have confidence reposed in him by B, where B had entrusted A with property to hold and to deal with on behalf of himself or others, and also where A had in some way undertaken to become B's agent. Now, outside the law, it is common usage to speak of a person entering some employment or taking up an appointment, whether public or private, as undertaking or accepting a trust. We call this a public trust. You know, a politician takes office, he calls that a public trust. To avoid possible misunderstanding, however, it is perhaps best to use the word fiduciary instead of trust, fiduciary, to refer to this kind of relationship discussed in the theory of parens patriae, a relationship which is in some respects trust-like, but is not strictly speaking a trust. So if we look at the parent-child relationship in context with the state, it is not a trust. There's no formal written indenture created. But as a matter of law, it is treated like a trust. This is the way it works. Now, you didn't know that. You did not know that you had placed your child into a fiduciary relationship with the state, which has the effect of a trust, and that you become the trustee, the state becomes the owner of the child, and the state then makes the rules and determines whether or not you should be maintained as the trustee. But that's the way it works, and that's the way it is. And it isn't that way because I said so. It's that way because I'm a reporter, and I'm reporting that that's the way the game is being played. Now, you might not have known that, but now you do. Now, one of the first things I ask somebody when he calls here at the law school is, has anybody ever told you this before? And they always tell me, no, I've never heard this before. It's brand new. Until you told me. Now, they typically don't believe me. And then they say, well, this is just too wild. This is just too far out. This is just too unbelievable for me to accept. And I hear you, partner. I understand that. Now, wait until you go home and tell your wife that the child that you have does not belong to you, that you are a trustee over the state's child. Now, in the Bible, God, the creator of the universe, gave us an instruction. It's in Leviticus chapter 20, verses 1 through 5. If you can remember that, if you're driving down the road, or, you know, it's Leviticus 20, first five verses, Leviticus 20. And it deals with passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. So, your God, your creator, he told you, don't do that. Do not give your child to some foreign and alien god. The state of New Jersey is a foreign and alien god, just like France and Germany. See, we call these countries. Right, well, let me tell you what a god is. A god is an entity that has the power of law. The power of law. It's the power to create law and to force you to follow it. Now, that's a sovereign power. A god is a sovereign. A god is a lawmaker. So the creator of the universe doesn't make any bones about it. He comes along and he says, I'm the lawmaker. I make all the laws. And don't you allow anybody else to make laws. And don't you agree to follow anybody else's laws except mine. And you'll see that in Leviticus 18, verses 1 through 5. I know, you went to church and they told you to obey the state. And they told you about Romans 13. But they didn't tell you that there's a little bit more to the story. Beside Romans 13, there's Leviticus 18. Okay. I just want to let you know that in code pleading, we put all the laws together. In indoctrination, we just take the law that we want, and then we indoctrinate you with Romans 13, but we don't teach you the rest of the law so that you can make an intelligent choice. That's the difference between indoctrination and education. Here at the law school, we practice education. And we're here to tell you that, did you know that there was three choices? There's public school, homeschool, and parochial school. If there's a fourth choice, I don't know about it, but I do know of those three. Has anybody ever told you about these three choices and explained to you how it's your right to make this choice? Probably not. Okay. Well, that's what education's all about. I'm here to tell you got these choices. I'm not here to tell you to send your kid to homeschool or parochial school, jerk him out of public school. I don't care. It's nothing to me. But when you call here, I'm going to ask you the question, do you have a marriage license and a birth certificate? Did you understand, sir, that you agreed with the state of New Jersey that you would submit to Social Lady and the policeman when he knocks on your door, and that you would voluntarily give up your child when you become undeserving or cruel or unable to provide. I mean, it just, did you know you agreed to that? People gasp and they say, I never agreed to anything like that. They don't know. They're ignorant, and I don't deny that, but your ignorance doesn't excuse it. It isn't going to change anything. Now, if you want to check up and see whether or not I'm lying to you, I think if you did a Google search, I've never done this, but I think if you just plugged in Google, then if you could spell parens patre, you know, can you say parens patre, boys and girls? I think if you could get that into a Google search, I think you'd find a lot of information. Let me spell it for you again. It's spelled P-A-R-E-N-S. Patre is spelled P-A-T-R-I-A-E. It's an odd spelling. You're going to have to get the spelling right here. P-A-T-R-I-A-E. Fiduciary Obligations and State Power. I'm reading a legal treatise written by Jeffrey Blustein, B-L-U-S-T-E-I-N. And it was published in the summer-fall edition. And I don't have the name, Criminal Justice Ethics. There it is. The summer-fall edition of the Criminal Justice Ethics. And it came out of some law school someplace. It was in the law library. But it's just one article written by one law professor. Hell, there's all kinds of information. If you wanted to look it up in American Jurisprudence, Corpus Juris Secundum, Words and Phrases, any legal encyclopedia under the doctrine of parens patre, and it'll be a more esoteric treatise, no doubt. But it'll tell you the story of parens patre, and then you can see with your own earballs that you have joined a regulated enterprise in which you are a fiduciary agent of the state. Now, you've given your child to the state. You have passed your seed through the fire to Moloch in violation of Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5. That's what you've done. So you violated the Mosaic Law. That's a capital felony, by the way. And then you have, unbeknownst to you, given your child to the state, and the state now is going to dictate to you how that child should be educated, how that child should be disciplined. And you've got Social Lady to contend with, and Public School Lady to contend with, and teacher, and so on. Now, the fiduciary relationship does not rule out the satisfaction of interests that parents have as individuals, but they may not criticize these standards on the grounds that the parents are a specific child's parents, that they know what is best for their own child, and that they believe some other goals are more appropriate in their child's particular case. Now, since the theory of parens patre regards parental authority over children as derived from the state, parents have no right simply as parents to define their own standards of child rearing and to demand that the state confine its requirements to minimal standards of care and education. Did you get that? You might think that you're the top dog here, but you're not. It's the state that is the top dog. So tuck that one away in your heart. All right, we'll have to take it up right there next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, talking about the doctrine here of compulsory education. Meanwhile, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.